Welcome to Insights for Manufacturing, the podcast that supports the UK manufacturing sector. Hosted by Jeff Beecham, the manufacturer's recruiter. Hello and welcome to Insights for Manufacturing. I'm delighted to welcome my guest today, James Causbrook, who is the chairman of Automate UK. Welcome to the show, James.
Hi, how are you? Good to see you, Jeff. You're right.
Yes, very good, very good. It only seems like a few days ago we were talking at Automation UK over in Coventry, but we've blinked and here we are a couple of weeks later.
Yeah, time flies. I mean, it feels like a lifetime ago, but it's amazing. We kind of backslap the day it finishes, and then the team down in Wallington the next or on the Thursday is having to think about ramping up the promotion on the PPMA show, which is scarily, I think, 8 weeks away. So yeah. it's a continual treadmill we exist on.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, since I've been in, you know, communication with Automate UK over the last sort of 6 months or so, we've all seen the rebranding of the PPMA group of companies to Automate UK. So just for anybody that's listening or watching this podcast when it's out, Automate UK consists of the PPMA, BARA, which is the British Automation and Robotics Association, and UKIVA, the UK Industrial Vision Association. James, can you summarise for us how you've, you know, had to strategically align the three operating entities within Automate UK, and what are the main sort of objectives of this new organisation moving forward?
Yeah, so I think I'll do the last bit first because that's how you be professional, isn't it? Is in terms of just quite straight, and I know when you had Peter on, what does PPMA mean? We could have been a trade association, a double glazing company, an accountancy business. We needed to have a name that you meant you knew what you stood for. Yep. My first year as chair, you were kind of having to speak to people and we were trying to lobby and stuff like that. So PPMA, we do this, we do this. And then you kind of splutter robotics and hope they get it. But in terms of your first point, we didn't really have to do anything with strategically aligning the three entities, because actually we were starting to get behind the curve in that the three entities were aligning themselves.
Right, okay.
I know it sounds a bit daft, but to put it in context, is in my day-to-day job next week, we're doing a big design review on a machine that goes out in 2025.
Yeah.
And that is a very, very traditional PPMA packaging machinery type piece of equipment. But within that system, it has other systems from BARA members,
yep,
from UKIVA members. And that's before we even factor in kind of the affiliate members who do suppliers. So the worlds, the UKIVA, the BARA, and the PPMA world were kind of amalgamating anyway.
Yep.
And actually, it was about us being representative to actually what was in the real world. What you also find over kind of the 570 odd members we've got is that there's kind of a core 80% that they all want the same thing. And that, if you like, is the Automate UK. If you look at the branding, that's the Automate thing, which is basically they want to sell more equipment or have ways to sell more equipment and services. And they want the best kind of working conditions to be able to do that. Obviously, I'm talking, you know, economic, governmental.
Yes.
And then they want, obviously, to be able to find people and be able to retain them and keep them skilled. So that 80% applies for everybody. What we've now done with the sub-brands, PPMA, BARA, and UKIVA, is we can then look at kind of that 20% that they may want.
Yes.
Now with BARA and UKIVA, they've had committees and panels for, well, since we took them over, or they became part of us 15 years ago. We've now brought in a PPMA panel, which is basically operating like UKIVA and BARA. So we can do that core 80%, but we're now spending a lot of time at looking at what those niche 20% are.
Yep.
So UKIVA will be very biased to doing using their services away from industrial automation, away from FMCG, away from manufacturing. BARA, obviously, want to, in that 20%, want to have a look at how robotics can be used away from mainstream manufacturing. So, you know, I think we're all seeing the amount of cobot usage or robotic usage that's now been used in things like CNC processing.
Yes.
So, you know, how do we deliver on that? And then with PPMA, our PPMA members are processing and packaging machinery companies. They're really playing a huge part on sustainability at the moment. I mean, in bite-sized form, but, you know, the packaging machinery and processing equipment of this country is leading to a point when you go to a supermarket where you're seeing a lot of recycled material, but at no expense to the consumer. You know, our members are playing that. So, yeah, so Automate UK deals the top brand does with the core 80%. And then we make sure that we're doing that 20% top up on the three silos as well.
Okay. Well, a good mix of activity and planning there, I suppose. And I guess with the three sort of entities, you have that opportunity to, you know, sort of share ideas, what might be working for one, you know, sharing a bit of best practice. And that's always a healthy situation, isn't it? You know, to be in a place where you haven't got silos, you can have that open conversation about how everybody can help each other really within the overall organization.
I hope we've made it less formal over recent times so that it can be more, there is more conversation going on. I get the feeling on that is we did a chairman's lunch down in London last Friday.
Yeah.
And I remember going to those chairman's lunches when I first got involved with the Trade Association, probably 7-8 years ago. And they were quite stuffy and quite, the communication between people would be jolly, but it would be fairly closed. Whereas I was quite surprised we got to a point now that when we do have an event where we get members to, they want to discuss with us what they're feeling. There's a lot of join up. You know, I think they all have the same things they want to talk about.
Yeah.
And they're really having this collaborative conversation now amongst themselves, which is just feeding us so much information.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at the UKI, Vibara and PPMA panels, you've got now 48 member companies feeding information up to the Automate board, which is 12 member companies in itself.
Yeah.
So we've got a hell of a focus group now, which means that we can move very, very quickly.
And that can only be better for, you know, your members and customers and the markets that they're supporting. You've got to be a bit agile, haven't you? You know, even as a trade organization or organizations, you know, manufacturing and engineering businesses are typically agile and innovative, but the sort of more formal you get within an organization and in this case, a trade organization, sometimes there isn't always that same level of agility and sort of flexibility, openness. So that's really good to hear. And it sounds like the chairman's lunch was, you know, a really good networking opportunity. I guess some of the businesses might have been, you know, competitors to a degree, but it sounds like there's a good, you know, healthy spirit in there of collaboration and everybody wanting to sort of help each other, really.
I think we've lucked out. It's interesting you say that. I think we've lucked out at a given point, which has made my job easier whilst I've done this. It is that you have even competitors wanting to work together. I think that's a little bit of a byproduct of community spirit off the back of COVID, where we had competitors sharing components. I did that day to day. I touched some competitors' machines with their knowledge because they had an outbreak. You know, community spirit, I think, has continued.
Yeah.
And then also because there is such, in what we do in industrial automation at the moment, there is such a mix of opportunity, but also jeopardy, that actually even competitors want to compare notes because everybody wants a landscape where the opportunity can be taken, but a landscape that isn't made of quicksand.
I love the way you've put that. It's a complex challenge for most businesses, isn't it? And I think everybody can put together a good plan, but you've got to have a bit of foresight. You've got to have a little bit of luck comes into it sometimes, but that openness and collaboration can just open doors that sometimes are just totally locked. You know, I think that's where some of the magic happens. That's just really, really good to hear. So in terms of the overall strategy, James, for the overall Automate UK organization, what are the main sort of aims moving forward? I mean, what are the main sort of challenges? I'm assuming there are some common challenges as well as opportunities for the three, you know, parts of Automate UK. But in terms of what you've been set up to do and what the plans are moving forward, what are your main aims at the moment?
So the main aim of the association is to make me look as good as possible until I jack it in December.
Absolutely. You know, number one.
So it's basically to, you know, because I've put a bit of graft in the last year, it's to make sure that I look good for my remaining tenure. it's actually, the PPMA did nothing wrong. We are still the PPMA, but it was about us doing more things right. So the main strategy that we have is in a variety of parts, but the main elements would be, number one, make sure that we don't just keep the shows as they are. We keep evolving them. Yep. We keep developing them. We keep doing things with that. And I'm not allowed to announce them, otherwise I'll be shot, but we have about 7 or 8 quite small innovations coming to Hall 5 in September. We do the PPMA show.
Okay.
Which means that if you exhibit, you're not just exhibiting for the week. We're really going to give you almost like a party bag of stuff you can use for the other 51 weeks. So wow. the continual evolution of the shows is very much a day in, day out strategy point. And Automation UK, which will now just be called Automation UK, and will encompass the MVC. We've got that moved to May, which means our footfall will go up. So we'll do a lot of work on that.
Yeah.
Second thing is communication is big. It's probably an area where we didn't blow our own trumpet or the industry's trumpet anywhere near enough. That is, we've loosely put up 30-fold and we'll continue to do so.
Yeah.
I think we're feeling that was the right thing to do based on the fact that the website's traffic has gone up by 607% in 6 months. Might tell you what the last website was like, I suppose, but, you know. So getting the comms ramped up is a massive part of what we're doing. But that isn't just shouting the same stuff over again. So comms is a massive strategy point on us about ramping it up and the ways that we'll do that. And then the final one would be the upskilling element or the more technical element. So I think, you know, we've taken on some really key appointments the last couple of years. Obviously, Peter came on board as our CEO 2 years ago. And in turn, he's appointed Laurie Barnes as CTO, who's been with us now for 4 or 5 months. And what Laurie's doing with Peter, and we've also now got Scott McKenna as an internal move to be our chief operating officer, is what Laurie's doing is really looking at the technical capabilities, the standards, and looking, he'll move on to looking at making sure members are working to correct standards and that we can offer them the training to do so with obviously, hopefully, the charity feeding in. So, so in essence, it's the exhibitions. It's the communication about appropriate automation, and then it's the technical and training services off the back of it.
Fantastic! So lots of interesting, exciting stuff going on. I mean, with regards to, you know, getting the message out there, you know, increasing the visibility and engagement really for Automate UK. Can you share anything sort of specifically around the type of marketing strategies or sort of comms initiatives that you're looking at?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think if you take a step back, and I know I'm not allowed to swear, is as an industry, forget about the trade association, we were pretty disastrous as an industry in encouraging people how to automate. Because, you know, you would probably have somebody turn up to a small SME that just wanted to automate putting stuff in a chuck or pull together, if it was a food manufacturer, a conveyor system.
We'd
come in and as an industry, we'd show off about what we'd done at Unilever, what we'd done at BMW, what we'd done at JLR, at Airbus. So as an industry, we were pretty bad at communication to entice people into automation.
Yeah.
That has started to get better, but what we are definitely doing as a trade association is trying to have a variety of ways that we can communicate to people that how they can take on appropriate automation in the most accessible way.
Yeah.
So rather than just showing off that this system can do X a minute, or showing off that, you know, so-and-so has sold so many robotic sales to so-and-so, what we're doing is we're actually trying to tell stories about how automation has worked for people, so that the end user can relate to it, that they can see relevant stories.
Yeah.
So for instance, at the moment we have a selection of short videos. I think second one's out this week with the company who started off as a cottage industry farming business that wanted to diversify, and you can see how they built up and automated. Everything we are doing with our communication, from the new website to search engine optimization to working with the end users to how we're writing blogs, is not arrogantly showing off. It's about, have you seen how easy this is and how you can do it?
Yeah. One thing I like about what you just described with the Chris business, you know, is, you know, taking a case study from a, you know, an adopter of automation. And as you say, not just telling other people about what system they've, you know, bought and implemented, but I guess it would the case studies share a little bit of the peripheral journey of what it's meant to that business and the impact of going through, you know, this sort of change and adopting the technology. You know, because I think for a lot of people, they think of, well, any sort of capital equipment, really, whether it's automation or otherwise, there's a cost to it. It does a job of X, Y, Z, and this is the output. And sometimes these things are sort of gauged on, you know, a financial return on investment, or, you know, a production efficiency figure, or maybe it's improved quality. But there are other impacts, aren't there? You know, there's also the impact from the customer's customer. So whoever's buying the crisps or distributing them or selling them, the impacts of new kits, new automation, they're far reaching, you know, and I'm sure there's been a, you know, a lot of excitement in and around the workforce as well. You know, I know there's a bit of trepidation, you know, in some parts around automation taking people's jobs. We know that's a bit of a myth, but, you know, when a business invests money, whether that's on automation or a new building or whatever it might be, it's got to be exciting. You know, they're spending money to make things better. So it's all of that sort of backstory and the knock-on effect.
You're exactly right. And I think I promise myself when I do things like this, I won't make analogies about cars. And I'm about to make an analogy about cars.
So go on.
After 20 minutes, amazing. Is when you buy a car, unless you're an absolute petrol head, you buy a car because of where it can take you, how comfortably it can take you, and the opportunities it might present you. You don't buy it because it's got a certain amount of rose joint on it and the prop shaft is made out of a certain grade of stainless steel, okay? And when it comes to UK manufacturing and us at the front end, we risk spending too much time telling you that the prop shaft is made out of a certain grade of stainless steel, rather than explaining to you that if you take that system on board, it will take you to, it will give you what you require. it will give you these opportunities. So it's that kind of communication which is quite key.
Yeah.
And then also you factor in as well, and this is not a criticism rather than a fact, is that UK decision makers are purchasing equipment and now general managers. They are not specialists. And that can sound like a condescending term. I don't mean it like that because I'm very much in that camp now. I'm an absolute failed engineer turned general manager. And again, you need to, if you want to sell automation to the end user, you need to be selling it to a general manager to let the, for them to understand what benefit's going to give them, not what it's, how it's bolted together.
Yeah, yeah. Different way of looking at it. Absolutely.
So that was one car analogy. I'm allowed two more. Is that what we said?
Well, there's three lanes on this conversation. So you've only used one. So yeah. We'll see where we go with the next one.
I'll do Mars bars or something. Something else I promised.
Yes. And can I just say that, you know, any of the brands mentioned are in no way associated with this podcast.
There's something apparently where I can't use lyrics to songs, otherwise you have to pay the royalties. Don't you?
Apparently that's the case as well. But well, I don't think songs were part of the format. But maybe we might have a bit of time at the end.
Automate UK, we're all about rapid evolution.
Absolutely,
this is your podcast now as well.
So over the last week, then we've had a new government, which hopefully, as they've said, will be supporting the UK manufacturing industry. How is Automate UK going to be interacting with the new government? I know you've been involved in sort of conversations and sort of lobbying and stuff, you know, previously, but you know, it seems like a pivot point really for our country, for the manufacturing sector. So what are the sort of main agendas as far as you see it at the moment, James, where you're going to be sort of engaging with the new gov?
All right. So Roots in a variety. We do a lot of our own direct lobbying now. And we have Peter on the Make UK something committee as chair, so steering to that. So we work with Make a lot to do that. We have Laurie now working on a lot of standards. I think there's more to be announced on that. So we're doing direct lobbying, working with other partners, and then we're also now starting technical lobbying. In terms of what we want to achieve, or what we're hoping for, is I think the first thing is we're looking at how government can put in the simplest incentives for automation to happen. And I don't think we're wanting like billions of grants. It would be lovely, but that's realistic. I think, you know, even in what you and I are doing, I think we prefer roads without potholes and working hospitals before robots. I think that you have to say that. But what we're looking for is we're looking for some form of national policy that is very, very simple for somebody to get some kind of simple kickback for adopting automation.
Yep.
And what really struck me, and apologies, forget the guy's name, is what I've been talking around my head was a phrase with that thing you and I were reading the other day about an automation levy.
So
something like that, where there is some nationalist kind of national policy of some kind of levy, where you get some form of assistance or kickback for taking on automation. I think that needs to be automation with an employment element to it, because obviously you and I can talk to the cows come home about Scandinavian figures that automation doesn't take jobs, but we're dealing with a cultural opinion on automation that goes back to the strikes of the 1970s.
Yes.
So I think having an automation type levy that either focuses not on job creation, but on job upskilling, which I'll come on to.
Yeah.
So we will push heavy for that, because you have at the moment so many different schemes. All of them are really, really good, but none of them are delivering because they are kind of like bite-sized to do with regional, to do with sector, to do with size of business. Is that there is no uniform, you're in a postcode lottery on whether you can get any form of grant and whether it applies to automation. That needs to change. Because we've had this stupid culture, and I know the latest figures aren't out, but you and I both know that grants that have been handed out to by the government to in further enhance manufacturing have actually then been handed back because they haven't been put out because the situation's been too bureaucratic. I think we both know there are some amazing facilities out there. Not saying that they are victims of this, but the MVCs, the AMRCs, the university campuses like Uni of Lincoln's got, who that are sat there waiting to encourage this, but because the system's quite truncated, it's not happening. So we will be pushing for one simple scheme that involves some incentive, simple incentive to adopt automation and use it as a way of growing your workforce or upskilling your workforce. I think that's it. I think the other thing we will do, or we will be doing, is really trying to break the barriers down about SMEs. And this, my view on this country's approach to SMEs, may mean that I break your swearing ban. Is that if you look at the innovation and you look at actually how this country is so reliant on SMEs, my membership is SMEs. I run an SME which is supporting its end users produce 55 million items of food a day. Yet we have this culture from governmental level down that SMEs are kind of second class and they don't need supporting. And frankly, most things that they, aside from this sector that are supporting SMEs, it's tokenism. That was very much the case with the last government. I remember going to the UK Manufacturing Conference, where the business secretary at the time just spent 25 minutes listing the factory she'd been to, which was Rolls-Royce, Airbus, guess what? Jaguar Land Rover, been to Port Sunlight, and didn't reflect any of the innovation that was going on with SMEs. What gives me hope is that the government might learn that SMEs have huge validity through some of the regional mayors, because actually those little devolved powers, I mean, I've seen Tracey Brevin talk a couple of times, and they in Yorkshire have really caught the SME bug for supporting them doing innovative stuff, not just in our sector. I mean, companies doing like AI and hospitality and things like that. So I think we're really going to be headbutting to try and change the culture towards SMEs. You don't have SMEs in this country, you have nothing. So let's stop treating
Absolutely.
SMEs like second-class citizens.
Totally agree with that. And I've always had a strong advocacy and affinity for SMEs. At the end of the day, the OEMs and the larger tiers wouldn't be able to function without the SMEs.
No.
And the media have got a lot to be blamed for it, I guess. Because whilst the politicians normally like to get their photos and their little bit of news footage out there in mainstream media going around an Airbus or one of these big companies, and don't get me wrong, they do create a lot of jobs, they hire a lot of apprentices, and without these large companies, yes, there would be a negative a knock-on effect on the SMEs. But I think this is one of the areas, even outside of specifically automation, just taking manufacturing as an overall sector. If unless you work in manufacturing, the perception of what manufacturing is, it is nowhere near what reality is. And that's partly because people watching the TV, watching the news, you know, only ever get to see or hear about the super large organizations. Mm. And there is that, I think there is still that sort of stigma that, you know, what's an SME? Well, an SME is some bloke in a shed down the road with two employees making some bashing a bit of metal, you know, yeah. Where SMEs really do house some of the most complex processes, highly skilled individuals. They're coming up with fresh ideas, you know, yeah. And the SMEs are feeding into the OEMs, aren't they? The OEM really. And I'll, you know, I've got to watch what I say here. Don't, you know, alienate myself from OEMs. But, you know, OEMs aren't like the OEMs of 60, 70 years ago that pretty much used to, you know, manufacture most of what they had that went into the overall finished product. OEMs rely heavily on their supply chains. So, you know, for jobs, for economic prosperity, to get more people into manufacturing, and we'll talk about what Automate UK are doing in terms of, you know, apprenticeships and training in a second. But, you know, I think everybody needs to just get behind this notion that, you know, we are an island of SMEs, you know, and that's, yeah. we just need to keep building on that, don't we?
And we need to celebrate it. We need yeah. to see it as an advantage. There's a cultural change to make. I think we will, going back to our comms, we're trying to do that a bit. You know, we're trying to understand, give people a view on the opportunities in this industry and how you can take it, and also the opportunities you have. You know, I think one thing you have in UK manufacturing that we need to get better at communicating, and certainly in my bit in industrial automation, is that if you choose to, you see, you're a programmer at the moment, you go, well, actually next week, I think I want to be a project manager. Such is the creativity and the flexibility and frankly, the requirement. Your employer will probably give you that opportunity, or one of yeah. my other members will. Yeah. You know, there is no reason. I'm the MD of one business as I speak today. I could decide that I want to be a project manager again next week, or I want to be a service engineer. I'd be a horrific service engineer, and my service guys panic when I go on site. but you've got the opportunity to chop and change in this world from a career yes. point of view that you don't have in finance, you don't have in HR, you don't have in hospitality. So we need to sing the praises of that a bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. So whilst we're on the sort of skills and the sort of people side of things, a quick mention about Automate Best, James. So Automate Best, this used to be PPMA Best. Yeah.
They claim that they came up with the rebrand name themselves, by the way, and they didn't just follow us. I mean, I think that's they're very much, you know, they chose Automate on their own. They didn't just see what we did and followed suit.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think the jury's out on that. I need to do a little bit more digging around within your organization to find out exactly which side of the coin that's really on. But yeah, I had the pleasure of meeting Charlie Allen, both at your Wallington office and at Automation UK. So Automate Best is promoting apprenticeships in engineering, manufacturing, robotics, and machine vision. Why do you think that Automate Best is such an intrinsic part of any solution to the current UK manufacturing skills crisis, James?
Because you've got to do it yourself. So it's incumbent. If you go to it, you go back to what I said about the main reasons why Automate UK exists, apart from making me look good, is our members want to sell more stuff and they want the talent to do it.
Yeah.
And the talent isn't there, and you've got to have a long-term strategy. So Automate Best is about the long-term strategy. I mean, it's not just, you know, the apprenticeships element, which is obviously what we really want. We want the biggest cohort of apprentices that we can get every single year.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're now doing STEM days at year six in primary school with Automate Best, or my colleagues are with Automate Best. We're doing STEM days to try and entice. You know, we only want, if we get 5% of a year 10 to go into STEM, that's a hell of a pull that we want to do. So we've existed the last 20 years with a low resource level of available people to be in manufacturing as a whole.
Yeah.
And industrial automation has really suffered from that. So Automate Best is really making, trying to play its part to make sure that issue in our world goes away.
Yeah.
And there's signs of that. You know, we've now got some of our, I'm told that some of our early apprentices, when it was formed about 9-10 years ago, you know, we got a couple of them that are quite close to having senior management jobs within membership companies.
Brilliant.
Not that that's the aim. So we are starting to see the fee to go.
Yeah.
We obviously, as part of the strategy as a board at Automate UK, or PPMA as it was then, made a decision that we would give Automate Best the fullest fuel tank possible so they could get up and scale up on that. And you're really starting to see that. Charlie is brilliant. I think Tenacious is really driving the narrative. I mean, their social media element, which is more kind of TikTok-y type bias,
yes,
rather than LinkedIn type bias, you know, that, yes, is, that's gone up by like 1,000%.
Wow.
But you, nobody else is going to find the talent for the industry. So we have to. That's why Automate Best exists.
Yeah.
It's something I'm very fond of. I think if I do hang around, they may not want me, by the way. But if I do hang around after my chairmanship and then something I might do in 25, I think it will be that, because I think I was so lucky that at the age of 14, I did a work experience at a motor racing team. And it wasn't that it was racing cars, it's that somebody put the trust in me to do stuff.
Yeah.
And that led to a process that I'm here today. But if that hadn't happened, I probably wouldn't be in this industry.
Yeah.
But I was lucky, and you shouldn't operate on luck. So what Automate Best is trying to do is making sure that those 14-year-old me's of now don't need to operate on luck. There is the opportunity to do apprenticeships, to do even graduate scheme.
Yeah.
I mean, theoretically, I think there is a pathway where a year six, so what's that, a 10-year-old can engage with Automate Best at a STEM day, and they could continue the journey to Automate Best to a PhD level some 20 years later.
Yeah.
So the pathway that the thing has is incredible. So it's about scaling it up. And behind Charlie, there's some really good resource, not just in terms of what we support them with, as, because obviously it is a charity, so it's slightly separate.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've got five incredible trustees who are, I'm saying incredible because, as I say, I might want to do something with them. That might not be actually what I think. But no, they are fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, we have Richard, Ian, John, Gary, and we just got Tim Poole, who was my first chairman when I started on the board. And those guys know how the industry works. They were apprentices when TVs were black and white. That's why they're not going to have me. So we've got a really good strategic lead on the charity now. And I think you're going to have Charlie on, and Charlie will make me seem like a clown. She has really got her head screwed on.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you've got the right person heading that up. Absolutely. And that will be an interesting discussion. Lots of, you know, there seems to be a lot of organizations and sort of support organizations, not just the sort of colleges and further education providers, but other sort of organizations that are, you know, promoting manufacturing as a career path. STEM, I was speaking to Rowan Crozier at Brandauer before Christmas in a podcast, and, you know, he's running a 180-odd-year-old Birmingham manufacturing business, but, you know, one of his main passions outside of running the business is the future, is the you know, the youngsters, you know, getting in and getting involved in manufacturing. So there's a lot going on. So I'm really keen to get that conversation with Charlie underway over the coming weeks. That'll be a really good addition to some of the other training related podcasts I've done. I'll just before we sort of wrap up, James, I mean, we've covered quite a lot of ground in this discussion, but I wanted to just ask you a question, really, because I know you know, your full-time job, you're MD of Brunwald UK. You're the chairman of Automate UK. So how do you actually balance, if anybody else is out there thinking, you know, and they're in a leadership position, yeah, I might want to sort of add some value and, you know, get involved and support a trade association, and then think about it afterwards, you know, how am I going to balance everything? How do you actually do that? Because, I mean, it's not just a part-time job that you're doing, because there's a lot of thought and planning and time that goes into, you know, your remit at Automate UK. You know, you've got a busy day job as well. What's the secret sauce behind that?
Well, first of all, you said I'm full-time at Grunwald, which I am, but my business partner just popped in the office to grab some paperwork. And as you said that, she just rolled her eyes. So that's maybe not the opinion. Do you want me to, I don't know, should we go full secret diaries of a CEO? I get up at 3 a.m., I have an ice bath, then I have a kale smoothie.
Yeah.
Then I do yoga, then it's a protein shake.
And then you wake up.
I think the answer is as follows, is... when I did it originally, and I would highly recommend doing something like this, because the change you could make with other people, not as an individual, is huge.
Yeah.
If you're passionate about getting a landscape that works for you, but works for the industry, where industry first, you second, you know, there is no better place than coming and playing at Automate UK. What I have been so lucky with is having great people around me. And that's played a part. So when I first became a director of PPMA in 2018, you know, I am fortunate that I have business partners in Samantha and Catherine, who also had the same ethics and values that I do as a core. Yes. So were happy for me to do this. They're supportive of the journey. I said I wasn't going to say journey. That's a bit Strictly Come Dancing, isn't it? You can edit that out or something else. You know, that's played a part that the people directly around me were supportive of doing it and wanted to see the same change. Were happy for me to do it. And it's the same now. You know, there's been times this time last year. We were making the significant changes on Automate, and at the same time, I had a business which was going through some changes with you know, inflation. Was it going to calm down? Was it not? And you're at capacity, but what I always had is I always had somebody working with me, either here at Grunwald or at the trade association, who could support or could cover for me. You know, and that's played a huge part. If I didn't have Sam and Catherine at Grunwald, and if I didn't have Peter, Scott and co on the executive, and I didn't have the board I had, I would have fallen flat on my face, because I've been really, really lucky with the pool of people I've had around me. And I hope I don't take that for granted. They'll say I do. But, you know, you look at the change that both my organizations have made since we bought this place, Grunwald, in 6 years ago. We'd worked there before. And also at the Trade Association, it's incredible. And it ain't me. All I've been is being a little fat toddler who's gone, why, why?
Yeah.
And I've just had a really good set of people around me to allow it to happen. You know, the buck does stop with you at times. And in both businesses in the last 15 weeks, you have to make some pretty tough decisions. But that isn't to do with capacity. That's just why you're here.
Yeah.
Capacity, when you've got good people around you to either give you a kick up the arse or take on some of the capacity for you is very easy.
Well, that's a wonderful note to sort of bring our discussion to a close. I'm in the people business as an executive recruiter.
It was probably a bit nice, actually. I might want that editing out, actually. All right. I should also say they are all absolutely awful to me.
This might go out in the bloopers part.
This go bloopers. And I've had to say that because we're trying to push for viewing figures, yeah?
Absolutely. Well, James, it's been a pleasure to talk with you today and to understand a little bit more about what's going on within Automate UK. Okay, so thanks again to James Corsbrook from Automate UK. Thanks to the listeners and viewers. Look out for the next episode of Insights for Manufacturing. Take care, and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.